Blog Talk Radio.
When he comes on, I'm going to be super excited. So I'm going to try very hard from trying to, like, not bounce off the wall because I'm very excited. As some people may know, the cult classic American Ninja, if I can say his name right. This isn't the guest, but it's Michael Dukoff. And one of my special friends, he's my pal, is Stephen Lambert, who actually did the stunts in the film. Well, American Ninja and quite a few other ninja movies is the director, Sam Furstenberg. He's the guy that's directed this film. And, you know, since I'm an 80s kid, you know about Breakin', right? All the people out there Breakin' to Electric Boogaloo. You know, I believe in the beat. I believe in the way I feel. Don't ask me to sing because I might break the windows. And, you know that song, din, din, dun, 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 din, 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 dun, dun, dun. You know it's from that. Yes, it's from the era. I'm an 80s kid. So, anyway. Let's see who's in the queue. Everybody that's in the chat room, hello, hello, and welcome, welcome, welcome. And I think I have my first caller. This possibly could be my special guest. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Okay.
Hi, is this Sam?
This is Sam Furstenberg.
Oh, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. I'm very excited. Thank you.
So am I.
I'm just so super excited because I've watched your work. And, you know, I know it takes so much to make films, let alone just the acting, but even with the stunts and such. And growing up, I feel like now it's like my second childhood because now I'm getting to know the people behind the films that I've watched my whole life. So this is like a second childhood to be able to speak to you. You know, you're the director of American Ninja, and I have so many questions. And if we don't have enough time tonight, I'll have to have you back on the show.
No problem, no problem.
And I know you're a very, very busy man. And if you don't mind, I'd like to start with the questions. Is that okay?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. My first question, I always want to know, where are you from?
All the way back. Okay. Right now I'm in Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles. Of course, I made the movies here in Los Angeles. But originally I come from Israel, from the holy city of Jerusalem.
Oh, okay. So how did you come about coming to America? Did you have a big dream of working in films or school or family?
Absolutely. When I was a teenager, I watched a lot of movies. I loved movies, especially action, adventures, war movies. And then later on, when I was about 19, 20, it became my dream to make movies. And when I was 21 years old, I have decided I'm going to Hollywood to make movies. So it was 1972 when I was 21, and I came to Hollywood to make movies.
So how did you get into, were you going to school, or is it something that you just started picking up? Or?
Well, of course, what I told you before sounds so simple, but it wasn't that simple. I came here to Los Angeles 1972, and I've decided to go to film school. Of course, at that time in Israel, there was nothing like this, like film schools. So I came here. I didn't have any idea. I did not prepare anything before I arrived here in Los Angeles. And once I came here, I started to inquire about film schools, and I was accepted to film school. And through the years, I've done also undergraduate and also graduate degree in filmmaking.
Oh, wow.
And even as I was a student, I already started to work as an assistant and started to work in movies because there are opportunities here in Los Angeles.
So what was your first experience? Can you go all the way back and remember what was your first experience like working on a film set?
Absolutely. My actually first experience was television. And I was working here at Channel 13. I was a cameraman. But then I met a producer, and he told me that he's producing a movie, and I immediately asked him if I can join the group, the crew, and he accepted. And the name of the movie was Lepke, It was with Tony Curtis. It was a mafia movie, mafia type of a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And my first job was what they called gopher. I go for this and go for that.
Yeah.
I was the kid that runs around and brings coffee and moves the chairs.
So how did you feel like you're on the film set and you're doing go for this, go for that? You must have been dying to do something.
It was an amazing experience. It's like finally, you know, like you're traveling all your life, you're traveling, and suddenly, eventually, you arrive at your destination. This is the place you wanted to be. So that's how I felt. I've arrived to the destination. I'm here. And now I can see firsthand how they make movies. I didn't know anything about the process of making movies, except that it was like my second semester, was still first year in school when I landed this job. So yeah, it was kind of a dream comes true, and it was very exciting, very exciting.
Did you have any influences? Did you look up to anybody? Was there anybody that inspired you, or did you want to work with any certain people?
No, I actually did not. I'll tell you the truth. I knew very little about the process of movie making. I liked movies. I knew that I knew the type of films I like. I like adventure, action, crime movies. All those American movies that were playing when I grew up, the 60s, the end of the 50s, the 60s, the beginning of the 70s, those type of movies, musicals, your standard Hollywood movies, I always liked them. I didn't have anything particular, and I was not knowledgeable enough until I really started to go to school, and I started to read books, and got more and more interested in film history, film theory, the different type of style, different type of directors, etc., etc. And that was the time when I started to acquire directions and ways of thinking about films and movies.
So now, when you first started going to school, were you thinking about getting into action films or just anything that would come to your mind? I mean, was that really what you wanted to do with action films?
Not necessarily. It's in the beginning, I did not see myself as getting involved in action particularly. I like movies. I like drama. I love storytelling. Melodramatic type of stories. So I didn't know that I will end up in this particular genre. I didn't come into this business, into the movie making, with making action movies in my mind. Not at all. But things evolve and happen. I did like Westerns a lot, and I liked very much the Westerns and the action adventure movies. I liked them, but I didn't think that Well, I will end up where I will end up.
Yeah, I was looking over your IMDb page, and I see that it was a kind of criminal One More Chance, and then it's like it worked its way into the ninja films. Now, how did you get into, because it looks like you have a lot of list of ninja films. How did you get involved? Because the first one looks like it says Revenge of the Ninja.
That's true. So, let's see. I do have a lot of passion for crime movies. I love crime movies. So, that's how I started. I started with One More Chance. It's a film that I made while I was still going to school, to the graduate school. And during the 3 years that I went to school, or 2.5 years, I managed to write, produce with friends, and direct this movie. And the movie was sold eventually after a lot of adventure. It took me more than a year and a half to shoot it and to make it. And eventually a film company, a distribution film company, was kind enough to acquire the movie for distribution. It was not a great movie, of course, with a limited budget, etc. And the company acquired the movie for distribution. Mm. And I started to know the people who run the company. the company was at its beginning. It was Canon Film that later became a big company, but at that time it was a small company, Canon Film.
Mm-hmm.
And they already, at the same period that they acquired my movie and I was busy still with the editing, they made a movie which was called Enter the Ninja with Franco Nero.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually the first of the Western type of ninja movies, the first movie to ninja movies to be done in the West. And the movie had kind of a moderate success in the theaters or whatever, in the distribution. So immediately they wanted to make a sequel, as it goes in Hollywood. You make, you know, a company makes money with one movie, they want to make money with the second movie, with
yep.
immediately, to follow up with a sequel. And the head of the company, which directed the first movie, didn't want to go and direct another movie. He was busy, whatever, with whatever business. So he just turns to me and he said, okay, you made a dramatic movie. Can you make an action movie? So what would I say? You know, I'm waiting for my chance. I didn't know anything about how you put together an action movie. But my answer, of course, was, of course, I can make an action movie. No problem.
Oh, no.
There was an idea. There was already a script. There was an idea in a script, and this was Revenge of the Ninja. Now, what surrounded, in the first movie that I have mentioned before, Enter the Ninja, the hero was, the good guy was Franco Nero. The
mm-hmm.
antagonist, the bad guy, was Sho Kasugi. They met Sho Kasugi, and Sho Kasugi is, to many of you who knows, he's a well-established martial artist and knowledgeable
mm-hmm.
about, also in the world of ninjutsu. And he was the villain. But he impressed the company so much that they want to make a movie with him being the hero, with Sho Kasugi being the hero. So I inherited the script, Revenge of the Ninja, and I inherited Sho Kasugi. He is now the star of the movie. And that's the point when I came in. So, okay, so I started to work. As I had experience. I was, even before I made the first movie, One More Chance, I was an assistant director in many movies. You know, I started, as I told you guys, I started with as a gopher, go for this, go for that, but I worked my way up, and I was an assistant director in many movies before the year 79 or 80 when I took upon myself to direct the Revenge of the Ninja. So I had a lot of knowledge of how the set runs and how you make movies, you know. And but I didn't have enough experience in this particular area of action, and definitely I didn't know anything about ninjutsu. I knew enough about samurai movies because I love Akira Kurosawa's movies, and I love samurai movies, and I love Japanese movies. So I knew enough about samurai movies, but I never saw a ninja movie in my life.
Really?
But,
so. How did you prepare for
there was
the
no
ninja
there were no ninja movies, only like Hong Kong, Japan, more Japanese movies, not even so much in the Hong Kong martial art movies. There were not so much of the ninja genre. So how I went about it, Sho Kasugi helped me. he is very knowledgeable. He recommended me few books in English about the subject. I bought the books, I started to learn. He took me to see many Japanese and Chinese, Hong Kong type of movies. And by observing them, I learned more and more about this particular subject, the ninja subject, ninjutsu. But action is action in general. You know, there is not much of a difference between James Bond and a ninja. Action is an action. A fight is a fight. A chase is a chase. So,
yeah, it's true.
That's how I got
different.
Into it. Into this business. This was my
like
break. This was my chance to direct a big commercial movie the first time.
Yeah, because it said when you're on your IMDb page, when you first bring it up and you see the first two films, it says that you're actually playing someone. And the funny thing is, in One More Chance, that's actually your name. They actually put your name as a character in the film?
Yeah, at some point. Furstenberg. But you know what? Even in the movie Lepke that I told you that I work with Tony Curtis, my name is mentioned.
Oh,
they
my
were
God.
Looking for a name of a character. He was like a projector, you know, a guy that projects the movies in the theater. There was some incident there, and they called him Furstenberg.
Oh,
but
wow.
Those are inside jokes, you know, that they don't bother me anything. It's just usually inside jokes. Somebody comes up with the idea, oh, okay, let's call this character, let's use the director's name for this character. So. You know, now, there is, of course, sometimes you will see appearance by the director here and there, small appearance, but I am too afraid of the camera to be in front of the camera.
Really? So you're like all behind the scenes, right?
All behind the scenes. I love to move the thing, to shake, to manipulate everybody, but not to be in front of the camera myself.
So you like being the boss then, right?
I like...
That's what the director is.
I love being the boss. But without... Not to confuse that the main job of the director is to tell a story. You know, that's really what the director is supposed to do. He's supposed to tell a story. All the rest is secondary. The major job of the director is to end up with a compelling story. That's the most important.
Yeah, it's bringing to life a story with characters, with people. And I do know the one thing on set, the more stuff that I've worked is, you have to really make the director happy, because if you make the director happy, that means you're doing a good job. You got to follow, you know, direction, not only know your lines, but also in stunt films, you have to be careful because of safety. And I'm learning myself that doing stunts and fight scenes, it's actually, from what a lot of stunt people have been telling me, when you're filming, you have to shoot different angles, and then also, too, when you go to throw a punch, it's not the same way as if you're doing a fight in real life, and there's so much I'm learning, and I'm going, man, this is confusing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said before, the director's job is to tell a story. But the secondary, you know, as part of his job, the director has to run everything on the set, of course, you know, to make sure, even to take care of safety. You know, it's not the director's job. There is always somebody. There is a stunt coordinator. There is a fight choreographer. There are special effect coordinator and people who are in charge of safety. But ultimately, the director has to make sure that nobody is crazy on the scene, on the set. Nobody is taking unnecessary risks and risk themselves. Accidents have happened in movies. So, and make sure that not only the director is happy, make sure that everybody on the set is happy and safe, and they do what they do, and they perform in a way that eventually will cut together in the editing room and will become a story. Because even if you take a sequence, a fight sequence, it's a little story. A fight sequence by itself is a little story, if it's good. Interesting. A chase is a little story by itself, the chase.
Yeah.
And the director has to make sure that all the elements will fall together and will, you know, eventually will become a movie. People will be able to see it in the screen, on television, and get excited about what they see. So that's really the director's main job. But the director on a set, has to take care of everything.
Yeah, and go ahead.
I'm listening.
Are you eating dinner at this time?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I'm dedicated to your show. 100% dedicated to your show.
Thank you. I was wondering, because I know sometimes, because I've had Stephen Lambert on my show, and we have talks, and we email and such, and I know stunts, they can be really crazy and scary at times. Do you remember one of the most dangerous stunts you ever had to film?
Yeah. You have mentioned Steve Lambert, and he was the stunt choreographer and the stunt coordinator and fight choreographer in several of my movies, not only one. I worked with him a lot, We are good friends, and we worked on Revenge of the Ninja. And Revenge of the Ninja, it's a medium-sized movie. It's not a huge movie, but even by many people consider it as a good, interesting action movie. Now, both of us were young, Steve and myself, and we definitely took risks that today I don't believe that we did it when we were 20-something. In Revenge of the Ninja, the lead character, Shokasugi, in a ninja clad, in a ninja outfit, has to cross between two skyscrapers. And, you know, as a part of his decision, part of the story, he will do slide for life from one building to the other. He shoots an arrow with a cable, and then, you know, he uses his sword on top of the cable, and he slides from one building to the other, breaks to the window, and into the room that he has to arrive in. Now, you know, we are the stunt crew and the special effect crew, they rig this wire from side to side, from one building to another building. It's a metal wire. And Steve is about to go and do and Steve Lambert was the body double for Shokasugi to cross between the building, because you don't send your actor in such a dangerous stunt. And he's just about to do it, and then his assistant or somebody say, wait, say, Steve, wait 1 second before we do it. Let's send a sandbag, which is at least your weight or even double your weight, and see if the cable holds. So Steve says, okay, let's do it. But he was ready to go. And they put together a big sandbag that weighs at least double the, you know, for safety. And they send the bag only, and the cable broke.
Oh, my God.
And this stunt was like in, you know, like in floor 20, 25. No safety net, nothing. There is nothing you can do between two skyscrapers. So the cable broke. Okay, thank God it was not with Steve on it, but only sandbags. So they reinforced the cable, double, triple, quadruple reinforcement. They send the bags again. Everything was right. And then Steve did the stunt. Now, the stunt by itself was quite complicated, because at the end of the slide, he has to break through a window, which, of course, is a special glass, breakaway glass, and enter a room. And therefore, you cannot have a safety cable attached to him, because he has to release and go, you know, release from the slide for life cable and jump into the room. And this was quite a daring stunt. I don't know if we would have done it at our age today. But he did it beautifully, and, you know, so whoever saw the movie, whoever knows the movie Revenge of the Ninja, knows that the main character, Shokasugi, slides from one building to the other building using the sheath of the sword, and boom, breaks into the window. And this was...
I remember this was
only one example. Of course, the people who know the type, you know, I made so many action movies, and in every movie you have at least 20, 30 different stunts, complicated stunts. I'm not talking about regular fight, just hand-to-hand combat. So if you accumulate everything, in all the movies I have made, there are hundreds and hundreds of stunts, and I must say that I was lucky enough, there was never an accident in a stunt. And the worst ever happened in a movie that I've directed is one stuntman broke a leg. This was the worst that ever happened. I was lucky to be involved in many movies, many stunts, and no accidents.
So, were you did you get really excited? I mean, since I grew up watching, like I said, the American Ninja. Mm-hmm. Were you excited to do this project? I mean, do you have a favorite film that you actually worked on that you were really excited about? I mean, do you remember which one would be your favorite, maybe?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Number one, it's even, you know, even though I'm the director and I'm on the set, when I watch the people perform the action, the chases, the fights, you know, of course, it's not me. I'm not doing it, and I'm not even coordinating it or choreographing it. you know, we have our people, choreographer, as you mentioned, Steve Lambert, Mike Stone, Sho Kasugi, Tadashi Yamashita. I worked with many of those guys, which choreograph and put fights together, and they perform themselves. Many times they double. I worked with Richard Norton, other famous martial artists. And when they put it together, and I sit in my chair with the director chair, and I see how they do it, I'm always amazed and I'm always excited about how beautifully they execute all the moves and all the, if it is beautifully, you know, because I work with some great guys, with, as I mentioned, Mike Stone, Sho Kasugi, and when they do it, it's so exciting. And there is another element that I should mention. You know, you are on the set. People are on the set, and we make movies. And those are, you know, an action sequence, particularly, are made of small pieces. It's sometimes it's technical work. Sometimes it's really artistic. Sometimes it's technical work. The real excitement happens in the editing room when everything comes together, all the little pieces of the fight, every punch, all the swords cutting, and then we add the sound effects, and then we add the music. Then it's really, really exciting to see how all those pieces come together and they become a fight sequence, or they come together and they become a chase sequence, or any other type of other action. But on the set, there is a lot from a director point of view. There is a lot of anticipation and a lot of unknown, and a lot of things don't work the way you think they will work, and there are little problems, you know, the cable breaks, as I mentioned, the car doesn't start. There are so many elements involved in, if you take a car flying and hitting a lake, like in Ninja 3, The Domination, or in American Ninja, Michael Dudikoff has to use a motorcycle fly or jump over a wall. This is quite complicated. Eventually, Steve Lambert was his double that used the motorcycle jump over the wall. But this is dangerous, exciting. You don't know how it will work out. You don't know if it will happen or not. Will the motorcycle clear the wall? And this all done for real. Remember, when we made the movies, we didn't use CGI. We didn't use optical effect. So we didn't have a painted motorcycle going over a wall, or assisting a motorcycle going over the wall with graphic element, with the computerized animation. We really did it. You know, somebody really took the motorcycle over the wall, or somebody really did the slide between two buildings. So this was another added element of excitement, the danger. And, you know, some sequences are a lot of bullet and explosion. The ending of American Ninja took us 1 week to do this one battle sequence at the end. 1 week of shooting. With explosions and bullets, you know, blanks, not real bullets.
Yeah,
but
it's
dangerous enough. You know, those things are dangerous enough.
That's my type of film. I'd be like, blow stuff up around me. I would love that.
You know, I once heard Steven Spielberg. He was asked, what is the most demanding part of you as a director when you do an action sequence with a lot of guns and explosion like Private Ryan? He said, the most important part of my job is to make sure that nobody steps on the flags. You know, the flags mark where they are explosive undergrounds. So he said, my biggest job is to make sure nobody goes over a flag, and I don't have an accident on my hand on the set.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, like, what, when you said the flags, I know about the mocks. How are you, because people are busy doing all this and that. I mean, is it colored a certain way? Is it black tape? I mean, I know what you're talking about, but how do you mark it so that people can see them?
Again, this is not my particular job. There is a special effect man on the set. There is a safety man on the set. And they put together all the explosions in the ground and the explosions on the wall, whatever has to explode. And then they mark him with flags for rehearsals, and then they put marks on the floor. They have some all kind of color codes. I don't know enough about it. And then we go to run through, we rehearse it dry, you know, one time, second time, third time, to make sure that every actor and every stuntman on the scene knows exactly where he stands in this particular second, and he doesn't go over an explosion, he doesn't stand over an explosion, and then the guy who operates the explosion has also scouts, people who view the scenery together with him to make sure he does not operate one of the explosions when it's when an actor or stuntman or double is in a dangerous range. And my final job is to go over it with everybody, make sure that they did everything right, calm down everybody, so you know it's not done with too much of a machoism and craziness. And of course we have also assistant director, a few assistant directors, and they're involved very much in safety, assistant directors. So yeah, we have known that in the history of filmmaking a big accident have happened, small accident, big accident, the one with the helicopter, the you know, many other blanks, etc. But thank God, in all of the movies I have directed, we never missed and we never had any major accident. Here and there, small things, but nothing major.
So what about the fight on the roof of Revenge of the Ninja? Was Steven in that one? How did that...
Yeah, let me tell you. This is also a sequence. It also took us like one... If I... Not wrong, it took us 1 week. This one sequence fight on a roof at the end of Revenge of the Ninja. It's like, I never measured it, but I think it's 11-minute sequence, 12 or 11-minute sequence. One fight, one sequence. And, of course, we had Sho Kasugi. From the martial art point of view, you know, Steve Lambert was the fight choreographer and stunt coordinator, but he's a martial artist on his own right, regardless, you know. Not now. Sho Kasugi is a master martial artist. He has a dojo, had the students, his own. Beyond students, but his people who work with him and put together. So we had Sho Kasugi, we had his people that worked with him. We had Steve Lambert and a few stunt people, and to put together a sequence like this, such a big sequence, everybody's involved here and there. We had gymnasts. We also had gymnasts, you know, to do high flips. There is a like couple of flips from one building to from one level to another level. This is done by professional gymnasts, who we found usually in universities and other places. What else you need in a sequence like this? So everyone might be an expert on a specific piece of the fight, not necessarily, you know, to use let's say a bow and arrow, there is an expert throwing shuriken, there is somebody who is expert throwing shurikens, you know, a fight with ninchakos, you have a guy, you have two or three guys who are expert in ninchakos, etc. Sword fight are pretty complicated, you know, so you have the expert there. So many people are involved, and though the fight, the action sequence, the fight is only between two people, between Sho Kasugi, which was the hero, and the villain, But like at least 12 different people are involved in this one fight between two people.
That's
doubles.
So crazy!
Yeah,
wow.
So, yeah. You know, I remember he runs. There was like a volleyball net, and he runs, and then he somersault over the volleyball net. So even if the lead actor knows how to do it, I won't let him, because you cannot risk your lead actor that something will happen to him, that he will be injured and he cannot come to work tomorrow. So
yeah.
Of course we use the double
and
an expert to do the somersault.
So, who was in the silver mask?
In different instances, different people. Sometimes even Sho Kasugi took over. This was the bad guy, Arthur Roberts. The actor was Arthur Roberts. He was not behind the mask, Arthur Roberts, because he's not a stunt. Only when the mask cuts open, it's him. But sometimes it was Sho Kasugi. Sometimes it was Steve Lambert behind the mask. Sometimes, as I say, it was a professional gymnast. Might have been, we had other stunt people and doubles who were expert at different moves, like sword fight. There was Ellen Amiel, was a student of Shokasugi, and both of them are very good in swords, so they did the sword section of the fight, etc. You know, whatever. I cannot remember today exactly who did what, but the expert would, you know, would be dressed on a ninja suit with the silver mask and do this specific part of the fight that Shokasugi was, most of the time was Shokasugi, but unless it was some very difficult and dangerous thing, that a stunt double will take over.
Now, did you ever, because I got to know, because you know, you say you're the director, so did you ever, just for the heck of it, did you ever just put on the ninja suits and stuff or any of the gear? Did you ever get to try it on?
Maybe, but not in front of the camera, not for any practical, maybe as a joke.
I mean, just like not for film, but did you have the guy, because I was like, I've always wanted to get a ninja suit, like a really good one, or, you know, a samurai, you know, a warrior outfit, and I was like, I just wonder, how does it feel to have a really cool, to try it on, just like, even not even just to film, did you get a chance to do that with any of the costumes?
I might. I probably did, because, you know, there was a lot of joking usually on the set, and I'm sure that at some point somebody say, oh, okay, let's put Furstenberg in the ninja suit. I was around, you know, they taught me how to twirl the sword and put it back, and...
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, at the end of the movie, Revenge of the Ninja, I got a set of not a ninja sword, but a samurai sword with a katana and a samurai, two, a long one and a short one.
Oh,
samurai,
wow.
Swords, which are still in my house, and, you know, standing and on a display in the living room.
Oh.
On display.
That's
so
sweet.
I show
they
it.
They made sure afterwards, right, that you didn't cut your hand off, so they waited till after you were done filming, and then they would show you, right?
No, yeah. And those are not really, they are not sharpened. You know that when we use swords on the set, there are many types of swords. Of course, we don't use real sharp swords, you know, because somebody might kill somebody by accident. We had the real sword, which are dull, unsharpened. We had we have aluminum swords for lighter type of fight. There are wooden swords. I mean, they all look the same, but the material is different. And sometimes there are even plastic and rubber swords. Depends of how far the camera is from the action, and what kind of a hit. If you really have to hit somebody, if one actor really have to hit somebody on the shoulder, of course, we use a wooden sword or plastic sword, not a real sword.
Mm-hmm.
Though I must tell you that in one movie that I made, which is called Avenging Force, with Michael Dudikoff and Steve James, a sword really hit Michael Dudikoff in the forehead. Not sharp sword, of course. And he bled immediately. It was a dull sword, but because it was a close-up, we had to use the real metal sword. Not sharp one, but boy, it hit him in the head, and you know, the blood came gushing out.
Did you get to catch it on film?
It was on film. We don't use it, of course, because
it was not
supposed to happen. You know, it was. It has to do with sword fight. Has a lot to do with blocking. You know, strikes and block, striking and blocking, and if something happened, you know, a split of a second, you know, two metal swords in hands of two people, something might happen.
Yeah.
Now, when it happens to stunt people, never mind, because, you know, we can use another stunt gun, another double.
Like
but when it happens in a close-up to your lead actor, it might delay shooting, it's tough.
Yeah, a lot of people nowadays, they're acting and they're doing their own stunts. And it's so different nowadays. And, well, now they have a lot of the harnesses and everything. And I, like you had said, there wasn't a lot of CG. I was like, maybe that's why I like some of the 80s films still, because there really wasn't, I don't think, that many harness and CGs. People just went and did it.
I'm telling people, you know, when I, sometimes I'm, I, you know, there are special occasion, Q&A sessions, interviews like yourself, sometimes live interviews, newspaper. I'm mentioning one thing again and again. We see today spectacular action movies, you know, spectacular. Batman, Superman, they are unbelievable. Or the latest James Bond. The action looks unbelievable, but the movies we made in the 80s, as mm-hmm. you said, the stunts was done for real. The fights were done for real. So if you had somebody falling in on a pavement, on the ground, it was done for real. There is something about when you watch those movies of the 80s that you feel that it really hurts. You feel the pain as an audience. As an audience, you feel the pain. I see movies today, and I'll tell you, I don't feel the pain. The way I describe it, I don't feel the pain. Yeah, there is the big sound, and there is the thud, and the fall, but I always suspect maybe the actor didn't do anything. You know, he didn't really. He hit the mattress, and then they put the pavement instead of a mattress.
Yeah,
but we couldn't do it. We didn't have the luxury of doing it. So if somebody had to go with his head, you know, through a glass, like mentioning in Revenge of the Ninja, there is a chase like this with a car, and one of the stuntmen, or Indian stuntmen, had to go with his head through the glass. It's not a real glass, of course, but it's painful. You can feel that he really goes through a glass.
It's great. It's still, like, people call the 80s films, they're like cheese. Like, I don't know if you ever heard the term, it's like, oh, it's so cheesy, like the 80s films. But I like them. It's something, part of my childhood, I grew up, you know, 70s and 80s, and you just have to go back, you know, you want to be all nice and cozy, and usually you can just kick back, put on Netflix or whatever nowadays, and put those types of films, and you kind of enjoy it. I mean, granted, I mean, like a lot of people that I like one of my favorites is Jackie Chan, and the thing that I give props to him, he still does a lot of his own stuff. He says he's getting older, but what he did, he didn't always have the wires and stuff, so you see, like, men like him, they're doing their own stunts, and they really kill themselves. You gotta love it, you know?
And you can feel it when I see a Jackie Chan movies. I feel it. I can feel that he's really doing it, that he's jumping from one car to another, that he falls on his stomach. I can feel it. And I don't know if I have the same feeling in a James Bond. I don't have the same feeling when I see a James Bond today.
Yeah, I never really got into, like, James Bond. I think it was more like martial arts type of film. I watched some of them and wasn't really into the whole James Bond thing. Sean Connery's pretty cool. I mean, it's just that I don't know why. I'm not so sure why. I mean, they have all these cool little gadgets and all this stuff, but it just wasn't my thing. I mean, I saw, like, I think when I was little, when on cable, remember how they used to have cable and they only had certain channels and they would play the same movie over and over again? You made limited. Now it's different. But they had the one Moonraker. They played that over and over again, the big guy named Jaws with the or whatever. I'm just saying but the fights, I mean, they were okay, but compared to some of the action films with the martial arts, I mean, you can't compare that type of fighting. It's like comparing apples to oranges. And I don't know, that's just my thing. I just always loved ninjas just growing up, and just the fascination that people is they're quiet. I don't know if I could ever really be a ninja. I could, but I'm a spaz, and I talk real loud. I think even when I walk, I'm real loud, and ninjas are supposed to be quiet, and I don't know if I ever could be full ninja. I would love the costume, but I would have to shut up, and that'd be very hard for me.
Still and quiet. Now, we also had a rule at the time when we made the movies. We kind of had kind of a rule that at least 45 minutes out of the 90 minutes will be action, will be pure action.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in the rest of the 45 minutes, there was not enough time to develop a sophisticated story. But, you know, as you said, type of audience, you know, movies have audiences. You know, movies are geared to a certain audience. Certain movies are geared. The type of audience that would come and see a ninja movie, a martial arts movie, they like to see action. So you have to make sure you provide them enough action. You deliver the action. So this was kind of our rule, to at least have 45 minutes of action in the movie. And that's it. Like you said, you can kick back, sit there, and just watch all this action happening in front of you. Fights,
yes.
Chases, excitement, motorcycles, helicopter, explosions, gunshots,
yeah,
hand-to-hand fights.
Stuff, yes. I love it. I love all the action, the fighting, because if you're nowadays, it's what? Some places it's $15 for a ticket. You know, you go out at night, and then it's really expensive to go to the theater, especially, you know, people that have families and stuff. But, you know, I want to be entertained. I want to go into the theater and go into a whole nother world, because it's like, you know, living life, you know, our new life. You want to see something spectacular in front of you. And growing up, a lot of people, they didn't understand the action films. They say they're stupid and it's not doesn't make any sense and they're not good films. And I'm like, you know, I wouldn't be able to talk about them to people because they'd be like, oh, that's nonsense films. And I'm like, I had to keep quiet for the longest time. I wouldn't talk about that. I was like a closet case action junkie. I would have to be quiet about it. I'd be like afraid to tell anybody. But as I was getting older and finding out there's nothing wrong with watching it, and I just respect and know the work and starting to work on sets, even independent films, and knowing how much it takes and being thrown around. I had a fight scene, and I was given a chance by a director, the guy I'm working with now, a guy I call my big brother, and I told him no one wanted to give me a chance.
Yeah.
So he goes, okay, you're going to fight me. So I was okay. And the very first time he threw me, because like, yeah, I'm all into this and stuff like that, we didn't have no paddings. He really flung me, and I was supposed to kind of go into this kid. He flung me. I hit the ground, and I went, and it made me go, oh, my God, this really hurts. And I was like, I got up, and I was like walking like I was drunk. He's like, come on, Shelly, you got to do this. And that made me woke up and made me give more respect, because after I hit the ground the first time and realized how much hard work stunt people and action films was, I was like, that's it. So I want to learn as much as I can. And finding the people like yourself, you guys are the experts in learning from people. I just want to know, and I'm just glad to have you on my set. And, you know, did you have any teachers that taught you? I mean, not just in school, but on sets. Did you have coaches? I mean, did you have anybody to show you the way when you were learning about films besides going to school?
No, I will explain you. I don't have to deal with it. I don't have to deal with jumping or, you know, director is a director. I sit in a chair most of the day. But let's take Michael Dudikoff in American Ninja. He had to learn a lot, and he was coached. He had two good coaches, two good people who taught him a lot. One you spoke with was Steve Lambert, which taught him and what to do. And the other was Mike Stone. Mike Stone is a famous martial artist. He was Elvis Presley's coach as well. Mm-hmm. Way back in the history, and they worked with Michael Dudikoff 2 weeks before the beginning of filming. How you fall, how you take a hit, not to be hurt during filming. How to make sure that every one of your moves look good. You've mentioned yourself, a punch in a movie is not a real punch. You know, we don't touch each other. The stunt people don't really hurt each other when they do stuff. It looks real because that's their profession. That's my responsibility to see to it that a punch into the face will look painful, a punch into the stomach, a kick into the groins will look painful and real. But you know, we all know they don't touch each other, and mm-hmm. you know, when somebody falls from a tall building into the sidewalk, it really doesn't happen. We don't throw people from the from
no.
20 stories or not even from 6 stories high. But how do you make it look real? How? So, yeah, they have to coach. They don't have to coach me. I don't do it. I don't jump. I don't hit people. I don't get hit by people. But I have to see to it that it will look good. So, you know, I have learned. With time, the more I worked in movies, the more I've learned how to make sure, and the more time I spend in editing room. Because in the editing room, you see if the punch works or doesn't work. You know, if a certain jump works or doesn't work, if it looks real or it looks fake. Now, I also would like to add to what you have said before, this type of movies that we made in the 80s, which were very so famous and popular in the 80s, and they were not serious movies. We never took them seriously. Those mm-hmm. movies meant for fun. So it's, in a way, it's action, but it's tongue-in-cheek. You know, it's not, you know, the people really don't die. You know, when a sword goes into a stomach, it's not for real. And that's a different
yeah.
from the horror movie, from the slashers. The horror movies, you have has to pretend, you have to believe that it's real, that people really dies. But in the type of action movies that we made in the 80s that were so popular in the 80s and the 90s, the action was kind of, you know, it was not real. It was between child game and real, you know. So you know that
yeah.
the guy who dies doesn't really die, you know. It's kind of make-believe. So that's
yeah.
what you have mentioned, when sometimes some people, it doesn't work for them. They say, well, the movie is not serious. It's not taking itself seriously. But it was not meant to take itself seriously. And there is an audience who enjoyed exactly this type of movies and this type of point of view, this type of movie making, which is kind of making fun, having fun, not making fun, but rather
yeah.
having fun with action.
Yeah, that's exactly, I've always loved action films, you know, it's kind of, but it was kind of, still growing up, because as a girl, like, where I was growing up, it just seems like it wasn't the normal thing to like action films.
Right.
It just didn't
no,
seem
no, not
like,
at all. It's interesting what you're
yeah.
saying, because those movies are usually for the boys, not for girls.
Yeah, and I just
the majority
love
of, the majority of audience for those type of movies are the boys.
Yeah, and it just, you know, watching on cable, it was kind of exciting because, like I said, it was just all, not like today, we can watch things anytime we want. I can even remember that even my TV going way back, now you're going to figure out my age, right? I had a black and white TV.
I'm older than you any way you look at it.
But I had a TV, and we had two knobs, one for a UHF and one for VHF, and you had to turn the knob, would come out, and we had to get a coat hanger and put the coat hanger on the top of the TV and turn it to get a signal before cable.
I remember.
Horrible. It was just like, it's not like today, the computer, we have Netflix and all this stuff, and you
uh-huh.
had a... Sometimes you had to hold the coat hanger. You had to have someone hold the coat hanger if you wanted to see a scene. There was no rewind. You couldn't get up and, you know, put anything on pause. If you had to go to the bathroom, you had to wait till it was done.
I remember the way exactly the way you're describing it.
It's like,
but
you
know, but all in all, I also made one movie that a ninja movie. That the hero was a girl, was a heroine. Ninja 3 The Domination, Lucinda Dickey.
Yes. I remember that because she had
the same girl from Breakdance. You mentioned Breakdance before. It's the same,
yes,
same actress.
Yes, because she had the short hair. And
right.
after you, I want you to talk about that film. And then it's like, discuss how you went from ninja films to a break dancing film. So what if, you know, how was it doing that film? Because I think she became possessed by,
right.
I think, an evil spirit, I think.
Exactly. The movie, by the way, was never, the Ninja 3 The Domination was never put on a DVD. And this month, I think 2 days from today, it comes out on a DVD Blu-ray, eventually, after so many years. And we just did the comment. I went, Steve the Lombard and myself, we did a track of commentary as the movie goes along. And there was a screening here in Los Angeles in a theater last Saturday to honor this occasion that the movie is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray for the first time. Ninja 3 The Domination. But you're right, she was possessed and she had all those powers, the ninja powers.
Yeah, I think I remember that. And a friend of mine on my page, a new friend, I think his name is Matt Stephen Kirby. I think he's like a big fan of yours, and he just friended me tonight. I think he was following my Facebook page, and I think he was talking about that.
Yeah, he knew. He wrote to me also, and he knew about the release. Yeah, people who are into it, they know about this. It's coming out. I think it's in 2 days from now it will be ready for sale. For sales, you know, all those Amazon and other. And so we had Lucinda. We had double. Many ladies had to double him in, double her, I'm sorry, double her in certain situations. And so we have enough ladies in the action. Not only this, American Ninja, we had Judy. We had to double Judy Aronson on different occasion, jumping into, she had a jumping, running in the forest, and she had a little fight with the bad guys. And so here and there we also had women and ladies involved in the fight sequences and the action that in the movies we have done through the years.
Those type of films too is, it's not like, you know how they show some fights, which I can't stand what they show women do, is women pulling hair. That's so stupid. And it's like, you know, I think it's just, maybe it's something for men or something, because I won't get that, because if I want to see two girls fight, especially if they're really pretty, and people will say, oh, what are you jealous of? I goes, no, you don't understand. If it's going to be a fight scene, it's going to be a real fight scene. Pulling hair, that's just like a low blow. That's not fighting. I know it's women, but whoever came up with the idea is women pulling each other's hair. That is such a stupid thing in a fight move or whatever. That is not fighting. I want to see, when we're going to fight, pick up those swords, ninjas, or whatever, go, you know, fight. Don't be like these, I don't know what, whoever come up with the concept. It was awesome pulling here. That's not a fight scene. I hate that. That's one of my pet peeves in women fight scenes. Nah, no.
Well, I don't think that in my whole career I never had a chance to stage a fight between two women. I did between a woman and a man, but never between two women.
Well, I think it's something. Well, you never can tell. Maybe in the future.
you just don't know what the future
will bring.
Never can tell.
So what? How did you get from ninja movies to a breakdance movie?
I would say it was almost by accident. I made this movie with Lucinda, as we mentioned, Ninja 3: The Domination. And she made that they took her and they made a movie. I was not involved. The movie was called Breakin. It was the name of the movie. And then, as we mentioned before, they wanted to do a sequel immediately. I was free as a director. I just finished to edit and to put together Ninja 3, The Domination. And I was free, and they turned to me again, and they say, you know, would you take this job as this responsibility to direct a dance movie? And now I'll tell you, the truth is that there is not a huge difference. There is not much difference between action and dance. Because what is an action movie but, you know, storytelling with the sequences of action? And what is a dance movie but a story with the sequences of dances? And putting together a fight is not much different from putting together a dance. And indeed, you know, that's exactly how we call it. We call the people who put together a fight, we call them a fight choreographer. They choreograph a fight, just like a choreographer of a dance choreographs a dance. So there is not a big there is really not a big difference between a fight and a dance. And I discovered it when I started to direct Electric Boogaloo. Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo. Regretfully,
I think I have a caller calling in. Do you mind if I bring the caller in?
Please.
Okay, let's see. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, it's Matt from England.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi, how are you? I friended you on Facebook tonight. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for corresponding with me. Do you have some questions for Sam?
I do. I grew up with all the American Ninja movies. Love the movies. I've got them all on DVD, and I've just ordered the Ninja 3 The Domination on Blu-ray with
so
the commentary from Steven and yourself, Sam. Would like to ask you a question about American Ninja 2 in particular.
Yes.
Do you know the scene where Michael Dudikoff and Steve James was on top of the mountain and they jumped into the boat?
Yes.
How was that scene done? How was that shot, that scene? Because that scene is, you know, was always one of my favorite scenes as far as the stunts were concerned.
Matt, this was the movie was shot in South Africa, and
yeah,
the sequence, this particular sequence, was in Cape Town, in a little town called Boulders. And this, this particular beach, this particular ocean part, has big boulders. That's why the name of the city is Boulders, and the water. So, if I remember correctly, Steve and Michael, they are running up one of those huge boulders, and the ninja, there are like bad ninjas chasing them, if I remember correctly, and they jump into a boat that takes off. I think that's what you mean. This is. Now, of course, a jump like this is always done in two parts, unless you use cables and you need any assistant. So you will have, of course, you have Michael and Steve running all the way up to the top of the boulder. Now you have two doubles. Steve had a double, Michael had a double. So now you go to a long shot, a little bit from the back, that you don't recognize that it's not your actors, and they will jump they will jump out of the boulder into the water, landing in the water, let's say. Or if there is no water, you know, we put mattresses and airbag, what they call airbag, and they jump into the airbag. This is the first part of the jump. Then you go lower, you go to the second part of the jump, which is landing in a boat, right? So many times we build next to the landing site, whatever, if it's a pavement, sidewalk, or a boat, we build a little tower. Let's say 2 meter high, okay? 2.5, which will be 8 foot, something like this. And first you'll have kind of a wider shot with the two doubles jumping into the boat, landing, because they know how to land from this height. And then we come with the camera closer, tighter, and you have your two actors, and they jump. They don't have to jump from that height, they can jump from 3 foot, let's say, and just do the landing.
Wow.
And then you see your two real actors landing. Now, in editing room, when you combine all those different shots, the close-up of them running to the top of the boulder, the jumping off the boulder, the landing, the reaction, and putting it together with sound effects makes it all look real, that real actors have done everything. But you know, in reality, making the movies, it's not the real actor who does.
Fantastic,
Now, once in a while, you will have a very athletic actor that will insist of doing it, but it's dangerous. It's really dangerous, to let the lead actor. Because if something happens...
It was a great scene. Can I ask you a question about American Ninja? To ask you, was Sho Kasugi ever considered to play the Black Star Ninja role? Because I know Tadashi Yamashita got the part as Black Star Ninja. Kasugi ever considered for American Ninja as the bad guy?
Right. I think what happened, you know, after we did the... Sho Kasugi did Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and he participated in Ninja 3 The Domination. He was the guy who comes in to help Lucinda, and he got other offers to do. He did a television show, some kind of a ninja television show, if I remember. So he was not even available anymore, and I think that's what happened. He was already busy doing other type of movies.
Oh right, yeah.
Other
movies. Well,
and then we did casting, and among the people who came in, and maybe. You know, Mike Stone was involved in American Ninja. And Mike Stone is a top martial artist. And maybe Mike Stone brought in Tadashi Yamashita to do the part of the Black Star Ninja. Maybe it was Mike Stone who brought them in, because, you know, they know each other within the martial world, within the world of the martial art. They know each other, all the masters.
Mike Stone is brilliant.
So it might have been, and even Richard Norton was in American Ninja. In a small
Him. That was the scene where Tadashi Yamashita breaks into the jail.
In the prison, right? Exactly.
Farmers, yeah.
So this is, which later on he did his own movies and he became a star by his own right.
I would like to ask you as well, are there any plans to release American Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja on an Avenging Force on Blu-ray with like audio commentaries and like maybe some interviews with the cast and crew? Because they're such classic movies, and I've seen them so many times, and I love the movies. I think you're a great director, Sam. I mean,
thank you very much.
Need
and
movies. Yeah.
You know, those movies, they belong to today. They belong to MGM. It was Canon Film, and then, you know, one way or the other, they belong to MGM. And I think nowadays what's happening, everything that belongs to MGM is moving to Sony Pictures, I think. I'm not sure 100%. I don't have any control on those matters of distribution and releasing.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great idea. I do think, just like you, there are so many fans for those movies, and they deserve a version with the commentary, etc. Michael Dudikoff can come and make and do the commentary. I can do commentary. So hopefully MGM or Sony will decide at some point that it's time to re-release those movies.
That would be fantastic.
Nice. Yes.
We'd like to ask as well, if I may, are there any deleted scenes from any of your movies that were shot that wasn't used that might be still available in the vaults? Any scenes that you actually shot that wasn't used in the final movies?
There are, Matt. There are. We shot our movies. Usually, the first cut would be 2 hours, and then we cut it down to 1.5 hours. So here and there are scenes that didn't work too well, or we didn't need them. But I have no clue where they are today. You know, all of this material once upon a time belonged to Canon Film. It was the company that produced it.
Yeah.
The company does not exist anymore. And the rights of those movies, most of them moved, as I told you, to MGM. Some of them to Warner Brothers, to other studios. What was done with the material, with the film, I have no idea.
That would be fantastic to see like a director's cut version of like Revenge of the Ninja. And
there was a decapitation. I remember there was a decapitation in Revenge of the Ninja, which is not in, because we had to take it out.
Really?
That would have been awesome.
There was a decapitation of the bad guys and his head rolling on the ground, but at the time they wouldn't allow us to put it, you know.
Really? Oh my gosh.
And other things but who knows? I have no clue where the material is.
Oh right, okay. May I ask, because Michael Dudikoff was in Germany last year. He did a convention in some place in Germany.
He
did mention that there's going to be another American Ninja movie. Do you know if you'll be directing it?
First of all, people are trying to put it together. I don't know about a real plan for such. I know there is no real plan for anything that is happening. But there is always always rumors. There are always a will to do this. At some point, now I hear that somebody is trying to put together a television show, actually, not a movie, rather a television series.
Wow.
But again, the rights for American Ninja belong to MGM, to the company.
MGM,
And they are the legal owner of this property. And they will decide if yes or not. I was not approached on any of those subjects. As I told you, I hear that there might be a television series.
A set television? Yeah. Well, that would be great, yeah.
It would
because
be
I know
great.
Because I know since the American Ninja movies, I know Michael Dudikoff has participated in the martial arts. And I know he studied jiu-jitsu, so it would be great if there is another American Ninja movie, if he could, you know, play Joe Armstrong again, because I mean,
a different version of Joe Armstrong, the older Joe Armstrong,
and Avenging Force, Avenging Force 2. I think he mentioned it. It's on YouTube. I think it's just Michael Dudikoff. I mean, he was he was at a convention, it was about a year ago in some place in Germany, and he did mention that there was going to be another American Ninja movie, and Avenging Force 2, which would be awesome.
We always had a dream to do Avenging Force 2, but for some reason it never came to fruition. It never happened.
I love that film because I love the script, I love the actual story, like the idea of hunting people in the woods.
And you know the idea comes from your landsman, James Booth, Jim Booth wrote the script. He's a great British actor, and he plays the bad guy. This is James Booth, the head of the agency, not the bad guy.
Entangled,
the head of the agency is James Booth.
Oh, I think I have another caller too. I'm going to bring someone else in so we can have a bigger party here.
Sure.
Thank you. Excellent.
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, I just thought I'd call in to talk to a couple of friends. Hi, this is Steve Lambert.
Hi, Steve Lambert.
Oh, hi, Steven.
Hello, Matt. Hi, Sam.
Oh,
hello,
hi, Steven. How are you?
How are you guys?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a quarter
to
4 a.m. in the UK. It's been absolutely fantastic talking to two legends. That's you, Stephen, and Sam. And I loved all the movies that you did together, and I will continue to watch the movies. And I look forward to my Ninja Free the Domination Blu-ray, which is on its way.
I've read people saying that you're talking to the legend Sam Furstenberg. He's the one that got me started. If it wasn't for the Three Ninja Pictures, I wouldn't have been where I am now. God bless him. He's a good man.
He's a great man. A great
thank you for the compliment.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
I mean, I've seen American Ninja, like last week I watched American Ninja twice because they show it on MGM HD over here in the UK on Sky Television. And every time I watch it, it gets even better when I watch it. I love American Ninja, American Ninja 2. Brilliant movies, and he's got such charisma, isn't he, Michael Dudikoff? I find him very charismatic.
Very.
Yes, he does. Steve McQueenish. I always thought.
Steve McQueenish. Yeah.
A big part of the success of American Ninja is because of Michael Dudikoff, of course, because he had the persona, he had the cinematic persona, the film presence on the screen. To pull it off together,
actors
are a very important part of movie making.
He was cute. I can't help myself. I gotta admit that watching it, I was like, I'm a teenage girl, and he was cute. So, and I love ninjas. I couldn't help it.
Of course.
Because I'm also friends with the guy that played Tommy Taylor in American Ninja 2. That was I can't remember the guy's name who played Taylor.
Yes, he's on Facebook.
And he was telling me a lot of stories about American Ninja 2, the filming and, what it was like to film. And, it was absolutely fascinating listening to this guy talk about his experiences of working with you, Sam. And,
Tommy Taylor, I remember.
You know, but I loved all the various ninja weapons. I mean, when you look at Revenge of the Ninja, I mean, the amount of weapons that was used in that movie, it was nice to see all those ninja weapons that were never seen in film before. So it was nice to be introduced to the Japanese, the Oriental culture, the martial arts, and brilliantly shot. I mean, the fight scene at the beginning of Revenge of the Ninja, I mean, that is phenomenal. I mean, the amount of work that went into that scene, brilliant, absolutely.
You know, Matt, what you've just mentioned, you remind me, on the set, on those ninja movies, on the set, there was a little department which was responsible to produce and to maintain the weapons, all the weapons. Mm-hmm. Because, they break, first of all, they make them. And then they break during work, during stand and fight, they break. So there was a little department, like two or three people, that they just maintained, they kept making, producing and maintaining the weapon all the time. The different shurikens and ninchakos and the swords and the bows and arrows and all the time they had to make them. And as I told before, they are made from different materials. You might have the same sword from wood and from aluminum and from metal, exactly the same sword. So they keep maintaining him. But Shokasugi was very ingenious in coming up with this weapon, with all the pieces, all the different little weapons. And,
I'd love to tell you three of my favorite moments on the three different ninja pictures that I did with Sam. My three favorite moments with Sam, if you have some time.
Yeah, I have about 9 minutes left. I can always have you guys come back on the show if you have time.
Excellent.
Oh, cool. Excellent. I'll tell you the first, Revenge of the Ninja. Sam is such a great director. My favorite moment was on top of the roof, the end sequence. You know, it was Sam, Shokazuki, myself, two gymnasts, and really just the camera crew. Everybody, you know, more or less had to stay downstairs because it was so dangerous. You know, it was like, you know, 32 stories high. So, I mean, we really became very close because it was so intimate. And, you know, what you see on that roof was a lot of the ideas of Sam Furstenberg and Shokazuki and myself working hand in hand together. It was a great moment, and I really got to know Sam real well, and we became real close around that time on that sequence.
We lost him.
He was a good man.
Yeah.
It was quite a work. We spoke about this roof. It took us more than a week to do this one sequence. More than a week, yeah. We were on the roof more than a week to do this one fight. But I told you, it's an 11 or 12 minutes fight sequence. And Matt mentioned now, I always like the beginning sequence of
beginning
Revenge
sequence
of the Ninja.
Very memorable.
Really.
Yeah.
It was nice in the Japanese gardens.
Yeah, I remember actually watching that back in the 80s when I was about 9 or 10 years old and watching it with my sister. And my sister actually couldn't watch it because she thought it very, very violent. Because when you're about 10 or 9 years old, I mean, she just found it very, very violent. And she had to leave the room.
I remember, that house was Shirley Temple's house, was it not?
I thought it was Japan. When I was like 10 years old, I mean, I watched that movie and I watched the Oriental sort of scenery in the house, and I thought it was actually shot in Japan. You know,
I had talked to somebody that was watching the house, and they said it was Shirley Temple's house.
It might be wrong, right, Steve. It's a house here in Los Angeles. This house exists here in Los Angeles.
Oh wow, Los Angeles, right.
It was built in a Japanese style. All the garden, everything is authentic, very authentic Japanese.
Beautiful house.
It's amazing. Amazing. That was an amazing scene. And
We were very lucky to get that kind of look. It was wonderful.
Even in this sequence, there is a little thing that was omitted, is the death of the boy. There is a whole little sequence how the little boy died. But they didn't allow it in the R rating. They didn't allow it. So we had to
really?
In the UK...
They don't, violence against kids, they don't allow.
Yeah.
It's X-rated violence against kids.
It's a little boy, Shokazuki's son.
Yeah, the little boy, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Kane, wasn't it? Like Kane Kasugi, wasn't it?
Kane, but there is another boy that dies on the board.
Yeah, that was... Shane Kasugi, wasn't it? I think that was Shane.
Exactly.
That was his other...
And this was the entire sequence was cut out. The entire piece cut out. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I remember that being cut in the UK at the time on video, and I think they reinstated it for the DVD release, like obviously many years later. The scene where the ninja throws the shuriken at the boy, and you see the shuriken sticking through the boy's head.
It was a controversial thing, I remember.
Yeah. But I actually...
Well, this is it for me. I'm going to let Sherry and Sam talk. And Matt, nice talking to you. And you guys take care and have a good interview.
Thank you. Thank you, Stevie. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye. Bye, Sherry.
Have a good night. Yeah, I have like about a minute left. So, is there any another question you'd want to ask Sam? Because the show it'll shut off by itself. So I do know that I gotta let you guys go, but hopefully have you guys back on again.
You know, I'd like to know about American Ninja. You know the scene at the beginning with Black Star Ninja.
Yeah.
Was that the ninja scene where the ninjas follow Michael Dudikoff and
right.
Judy through the woods? Was that a longer scene originally when it was shot? I mean, was there more to that scene, or was
Matt, there probably was. I cannot remember how long everything. You know, we overshoot.
Yeah.
We shoot a lot of stuff. Not every stunt works. Not every piece of the action sequence works. And sometimes
right.
we have to give up something that doesn't work or doesn't look good or doesn't look believable. So it might have been a little bit longer. But, you know, all in all, you know, there is plenty there with the people who want to steal the weapon and the ninja group and the Tadashi Yamashita and the little car and the truck turning over and the car turning over.
Yeah.
And then they run into the jungle and... The bad guys are chasing them, and Michael and Judy jump into the lake, which they did by themselves. I actually have a photo of both of them in the air, flying in the air. So it was quite sophisticated as it is today.
Well, this is definitely a really great show tonight. It's gonna, like I said, I only have a certain time, so I would love I'd be
fine.
Talking all night. So I do thank you for coming on my show, and you can call
thank
at any time.
You.
And
thank
Sam,
you very much,
Esther.
It's been an honor. It's been an honor talking to you, and I will still keep watching the movies. I'm looking forward to my Ninja 3, The Domination, which should be here in the next couple of days.
Terrific.
And it's been an honor talking to you, Sam. It really has.
You too, Matt. Very nice talking to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much
well,
indeed.
Well, thank you
yeah.
guys, and I do enjoy tonight. It was really great, and I hope to have you guys both on the show, and you guys have a good night.
Then you say, as you say, it will be on the internet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Could I ask Shelley something, just quickly?
Sure.
Have you got any plans to have Michael Dudikoff on the show?
I will help you, Shelley. I will help you to get Michael.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was asking me.
Yeah.
I guess I can email you, Sam,
yes.
talk, and I'll try if he wants
he's
to be
fantastic.
Again.
He Michael will be happy to be on your show, and he's very good with telling stories, etc. And I will help you to get him on the show.
Thank you so much, and I was like
thank
I said, I would
much.
Love to talk, but time is up, and I
all
thank
right.
you very much for a wonderful night. I feel like a little girl once again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Shane. Bye bye.
Well, thank you guys, and have a good night.
Okay,
you too.
Bye.
Bye. Well, I could talk all night, but I only have so much time for the show, and I'll just have these guys back on the show. Thank you, Stephen Lambert, for calling in. Thank you, Sam, my guest. And also, Sam Furstenberg, thank you so much. I enjoyed our talk tonight, and you guys inspired me my whole night. Forgive me. I work 10 hours a day, come home to set up the radio show, and it was just a sheer enjoyment. Once again, I feel like a little girl once again and be able to talk with the men that I've grown up watching films and everyone out there that has a dream, whatever your dream may be. And you all know my dream is to work with Jackie Chan. Just remember, whatever your dream may be, you're as good as anybody else, so you go for it. Once again, I'm ending the show with the song that's going to be from one of the films that I'm starring in, and I'm playing a Valkyrie, and it's from a film called Valkyrie. And like with any film, you definitely know that music sets the mood. Well, everyone, have a good night, and thanks for listening.